So the place where I wanted to start was with the 22nd paragraph in the text we've been reading, and I'll read it aloud for the sake of folks that are tuning in cyberspace eventually. When the clarity and one-pointedness of calm abiding, the first level of meditation state, have been attained, it is possible to develop the subtle being through visualization or imagery techniques. And he goes on, the later parts of the text, to talk about this subtle being that's developed through the process of image work or imagery. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. And to put it in a different context, there is, and the subtle being, or the image being that he's talking about, is when you meditate on Vajrasattva, the image of Vajrasattva, for example, or even if you meditate on the image of Shakyamuni, there's a certain place, a certain practice, where a part of the practice, rather, where you and that image unite and you become it. And when that happens, that's practicing being the image being or the subtle being. And there's a context that he doesn't give here that I wanted to share with you all. And that is that in the tradition of meditating with images in this way, the Vajra path, as we've talked about it, or the Tantra path, or has different kinds of names. There's a core teaching called taking death, intermediate state, and rebirth into the path. That's what it's usually called. What it means is to take the whole of experience of life and death and everything that's associated with life and death and bring it into practice. And the way in which Buddhists think about this, and actually it's pretty much the way, it's pretty common, in fact, Indian thought, is that if you start out by thinking about the different kinds of consciousness that everybody is aware of. Everybody is aware of the fact that they're awake, that they have dreaming experiences, and that they have experience of not dreaming and not being awake, which is dreamless sleep. That's what we call it. So every day we go through this cycle of being awake, being asleep without dreaming, and dreaming and having several dreams. And sometimes people don't remember their dreams, but the scientists say that you dream whether you remember them or not, that if you didn't dream you'd be crazy, which is interesting. So I don't know, maybe crazy people don't dream, but anyway, we all dream, if we remember it or not. You're not so sure. You have that look. Oh, you dream. Oh, okay. Oh, I bet this is a really sensitive tape recorder. I bet that slurp really sounded interesting. I have to be careful. So it's common in Indian religions to start with that way of thinking about things and sort of look at this and look at it kind of in a way, though, that we don't tend to think about it. For example, we tend to think about, and this is all about taking death in the intermediate state and rebirth in the path. It's just getting at it from a different angle. We tend to think that dreamless sleep is a state of unconsciousness. That's sort of the common Western point of view, that I'm not dreaming and I'm not awake, so I'm unconscious. Nothing's going on. But the pretty much the view shared by all of Indian religions, and Buddhism in origin is an Indian religion, is that when you're not dreaming but you're asleep, you're aware or you're conscious, but you're conscious of nothing. It's not that you're unconscious, you're conscious of nothing. It's sort of like if you go down to the bottom of Carlsbad Caverns and they flip off the lights, you really can't see anything. You're not blind, but you can't see anything. You're looking into complete darkness, but you are looking. It's just that there's nothing to stimulate your retina. And it's really black. We've been there and they've done that. It's like you can't believe how black it is if you think you know what dark is. Boy, that's dark. So, dreamless sleep, from this point of view of Indian thought, is awareness of nothing, because the senses aren't working and the mind isn't working, but awareness exists. So there's a distinction between awareness and mind, because you can be aware of what your mind is doing. So awareness and mind, or consciousness and mind, are two things. So this is a little, for a lot of modern people, this is a little hard to chew on, but anyhow, we'll go that way, because it opens the door to where we need to go to and what I want to talk about. So, if you think about then, what would that state be like, awareness of nothing at all? That is a challenge. It's a challenge. So, the Buddhists have gone a step farther with that than some of the other Indian philosophers, and they've said that the state of mind, which is like dreamless sleep, is very similar to what happens at the moment of death. That at the moment of death, you're aware of nothing. It's not that you cease being aware, but that you're aware of nothing. And the reason that this is kind of important is, from the Buddhist point of view, consciousness or awareness has a continuity. It never ends. It has no beginning, and it has no end. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't change. In fact, they say it's made up of moments, and it transforms over time. And some schools of Buddhist thought say that those moments of consciousness are like flickers on that are separated by flickers off. And they even say that in a finger snap, there are 36 of them. Someone is a really good meditator to figure out their moments of on consciousness and off consciousness in a finger snap. Anyhow, that's what they say. And I actually even know one Western meditator who said he got into seeing that. And he wasn't crazy, so he might be reliable. Anyway, that's what he said. His name was Dan Brown. He's actually a well-known neurophysiologist, psychologist. But not the Dan Brown who wrote the novels. A different Brown. I'm sorry. Right. I need to be specific
it's
about that.
Name.
Yeah. I think it was Dan Brown. Anyhow, his last name was Brown. But the point that's important is that however you want to describe it, the mind stream, consciousness, these are different words for what I'm trying to get at, has a continuity over time and has no beginning and end from the Buddhist point of view. And each moment arises as a result of the existence of the previous moment. It's a causal phenomenon. We can come back to that sometime if you really want to talk about it. But the main point is that there's a stream of awareness. And part of that stream of awareness is dreamless sleep. Part of that stream of awareness is dreaming. Part of that stream of awareness is the wakeful consciousness that we have right now. And that's sort of those three states of consciousness or a cycle we go through every day. But they're analogous to other things. So dreamless sleep is analogous to the moment of death, because they say at the moment of death, happened is the body has fallen apart, the mind is not working, it's fallen apart also, but there is still awareness. Now, of course, we think of awareness has to exist in dependence on a body and a mind. They don't. So, whether we want to believe it or not, I'm just going to tell you what they say. So there's this awareness, this type of awareness. It's obviously different than the kind of awareness that's aware through the body or aware through the mind, but there is this awareness. But at the moment of death, it's aware of nothing, because it can't be aware of anything because the body and mind are gone. So it's aware of nothing. And that's what the moment of death is. They also describe it as being clear light, which is doesn't mean like a flashing light. It means something else. I don't know exactly how to describe it because I can't remember it. I can't meditate on it, but you know, I can just sort of give you what they say about it. Then they say that the dream state that we ordinarily have every day is analogous to what happens between the moment of death and the moment of rebirth, because just about everybody in Indian thought, Buddhists and non-Buddhists, believe in reincarnation. And, you know, the easiest way to think about that will come to a minute. But in between, there's this space. You've heard the word bardo, maybe? No? Okay, well, bardo means in between. It's the space between the death of one body and the birth of another body. This in-between space where the awareness is replaying memories that are associated with the stream of awareness. There's a place in here where he talks about the basis, and he says, see if I can find it. I probably won't be able to. Anyhow, he talks about the basis as where the place where the imprints occur in the mind. Oh, yeah, it's in the 10th paragraph. The basis is where the mental imprints are stored. So, in the space between death and rebirth, the mental imprints kind of run wild because there's nothing to restrain them. So awareness is aware of memories of mental imprints. And so essentially, it's like a hallucinatory state. And there's not much in the way of discrimination going on because it's just like this mishmash, like dreams. You know, we can have dreams which are wonderful and dreams which are horrific and dreams which are just bizarre and everything else, you know, and you just upon. Did you have a pepperoni pizza for dinner? You know, did you have a lovely day and then you fall asleep and you're having a nice evening? You know, did you hang out with friends and have like a warm evening? Or did you, you know, have a rotten day at work and your boss yelled at you and you fall asleep and, all, you know, anything can replay when you're dreaming and you don't have any control over it. I mean, it's not like you can't have control over it, but our experience is you don't have any control over it. So in the in-between state, it's kind of like you're thrown into this dream space without a body, and the stories just kind of go on. It's like dream. Then you get a new body, and then that's rebirth, and that's kind of the ordinary thing that we're all used to. So that's like waking consciousness. So, in the view of Vajrayana, every day you go through this cycle of wakefulness, dream, and deep sleep, which is analogous to and has the same characteristics as going from life to life, because you have wakeful consciousness, you have the moment of death, which is awareness of nothing, then you have this uncontrolled dream state between the lives where all the old memories play themselves, not all, many of the old memories play themselves out. And then you have this state of rebirth. And that's called, when you practice with that, it's called taking death in between and rebirth into the path, because you can practice with it. And there are many reasons why you might want to practice with it. So when the Lama who wrote this, Tarap Tulku. Last time I said this, I got it wrong. I said Tara Tulku, which is my old teacher. But this is Tarap Tulku. That's why I wanted to check it so I wouldn't get it wrong again. Tarap Tulku is talking about practicing with visualization and practicing with the images. He's talking about practicing with the dream state. And getting into the dream state and having the ability to kind of hang out in that space or in that time in a way where you can become more conscious and more comfortable with it. So if you think about this, if you've sat doing a visualization meditation like Vajrasattva or Shakyamuni Buddha, and you've gotten to this place where you get to where you kind of they merge, where the image and you merge, and you're practicing I'm Vajrasattva, and you start getting into this sense of I am this image rather than this image is something other than me. If you spend enough time sitting with that, kind of what you'll experience happening is it gets to feel a little bit like dreaming and wakefulness coming together at the same time. You kind of have to spend 15, 20, 30 minutes with your mind focused on it. Whenever your mind wanders away, you pull it back. But you'll kind of feel like moving into a dreamy kind of a space where you're awake, where you're wakeful, where you're conscious, but at the same time there's like a dreamy quality to what's happening. And that's the in-between or the dream merging with wakeful consciousness. And that's a very magical space, actually. You know, one of the things that April talked about when she was doing the Shakyamuni meditation was how nice it was, how luminous and how good she felt when she was into that space and has certain kinds of characteristics. And I thought, well, that's because, you know, these things are merging. This kind of dream space and wakeful space are coming together, and the images become alive when that happens. They become lively, and the space becomes lively, and you enter into it in a different kind of way. It's not merely a constructed simulation. I mean, it is, but it's juicy and engaged and vibrant in a different kind of a way. So that's when the practice is successful. Now, in the context of the highest kind of meditation practice, the intention actually is to be able to, at the moment of death, be aware that you're at the moment of death, not be unawares. In other words, now this gets hard to talk about, because for us typically, if ordinary people die, it's kind of like you're aware of nothing, just like in dreamless sleep, you're aware of nothing. But they say that it's possible to be not, let's see, boy, I'm going to get caught in the words here. For us, we're aware of nothing because the mind and the senses aren't working. So there's this kind of this one unitary condition. And because it's a unitary condition, we're not aware of anything because we're not discriminating. In dream, we have these dream images, and so we're aware because we're discriminating. There's this, there's that, there's the other thing. But in the moment of death or in dreamless sleep, there's no differentiation, so there's nothing to be aware of. That's why they say you're aware of nothing, because there's no differentiation which allows you to separate this from that. So to us, that feels like unconsciousness. I don't know if this is making any sense. I'll keep on. So it is possible, they say, at the moment of death, to be aware that you're in a non-differentiated state, which is then not awareness of nothing, but awareness of being in a non-differentiated state. Well, that's different. It's the best I can do to explain it. That's different. You're aware of being in a non-differentiated state. And hanging out in that place is a good thing. And why is it a good thing to hang out in that place? Because if you're in a non-differentiated state, and you're aware of being in a non-differentiated state, not unconscious, but aware of being in a non-differentiated state, then you're aware of your absolute unity with everything that exists. It's like what is considered religious experience in most of the world's traditions. It's like, you know, it's like merging with God, is the way it would be talked about in the Western tradition. But what the Buddhists say is this merging with God, to use the Western language, occurs at the moment of death. And you can practice and prepare for it and move into it in a conscious way. That's what's unique about the Buddhist tradition, that it says that. I mean, if you think about what the Western tradition says, like, when would you meet God? If you believed in God, when would you meet God? For most Westerners, when you die. I mean, so there's nothing, radically, you know, in terms of conventional world religion, there's nothing radical about what they're saying here. You die, you meet God. You die, you get into the clear light. It's the same thing. What's radically different is that they say you can prepare to enter that space with awareness and know that that's what's happening rather than sort of be not being aware. again, then, from the Buddhist point of view, what happens after you're in that space, though, is you come back out into another level of differentiated awareness, which is like dream. It's the in-between state. And again, if you can practice, then you can be aware that you're in that space, rather than being subject to the dream. You know, I mean, mostly we get into dream, and it's like, we know we're dreaming. Well, we're dreaming, we're experiencing the dream, but we rarely know we're dreaming. That wasn't being clear. We're having a dream, we're dreaming, we're aware, but we're not aware that we're dreaming, usually. If we were aware we were dreaming, and some people can be, that's called lucid dreaming, because then you can change the dream. So, if you practice these visualizations successfully, you can actually change what's going on in the in-between state, in the dream. Just like you can change what's going on in the dream in this life, you can change what's going on in the in-between. In between death and rebirth, you can change the experiences you're having. So you might wonder, well, so what? Why? You know, what difference does it make? And the answer to that is, we've all had nightmares, and they suck. Right? Imagine having the kind of nightmare you could have between one life and another. Not good. Definitely not good. We also have dreams that are really wonderful, that are heavenly. Well, imagine being able to determine that that's the space that you're going to get into between lives, and that's where you're going to spend time. That would be a desirable thing to do. And would have a positive impact on your next life, because you go from, on the one hand, a mixture of all kinds of weirdness, dreams, or terror and happiness and what have you, or just sheer terror into who knows what. Could go from a completely beatific in-between experience into your next life. And that would be a more positive way to make an entrance. So all of this is predicated on the idea, of course, of rebirth. Now, Tarab Tulku talks about it in a somewhat different context. He talks about working with the dream state as a way of achieving a quality of relatedness and unity in this life. And that happens. That really does happen. I can say that because to a certain extent I can get into that space and feel more connected with what's going on. So even if you don't kind of go for the idea of rebirth, if you are interested in meditation as a way of healing your relationship with your experience and the complexity of the world that you're in, that you're alienated from, still the practice does that. And that I can say is true. I can't say anything about clear light of death from my own experience that I can recall, or the in-between state from my own experience that I can recall. It all makes sense to me. But anyhow, I can say that working with the images does change your relationship with the space around you. And that's good enough in itself. Anyway, I wanted to talk about this because it's another way of explaining what Tarab Tulku is getting at and why we work with images. So let me leave it at that. And we'll do some meditation, and then if you have some questions, we'll get into that. It's good. Wonder how I did time-wise. Oh, 24 minutes. Not bad.